Hey, listeners, I'm Joni B. Cole, host of Author Can I Ask You? For people like me who love books and the stories behind the books, this show gives me the chance to ask authors about what they write and why they write. Plus, I like to throw in a few odd questions just to get to know each author a little bit better as a person. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Today, I welcome author and amateur astronomer Ed Ting. To his fellow sky watchers, Ed's a rock star, both for his amazing photographs of the cosmos and for his more down-to-earth telescope reviews. Ed is also the author of Astrophotography, a practical guide that mixes personal stories with the technical aspects of astronomical imaging. Last but hardly least, Ed's related YouTube videos have attracted over 500,000 viewers from around the globe. Hey there, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Ed, I met you when you were completing the first of two of your advanced degrees in creative writing. So we've become good friends since then, and I've learned all sorts of interesting things about you, like the fact that you left a 30-year career in sales to pursue writing, and you're a gifted pianist. And an avid bike rider who logged close to 12,000 miles just last year. But Ed, the question I want to ask you first is this. What's it like being a YouTube sensation?
Well, first of all, I'm not a YouTube sensation. I mean, some of these people have millions of subscribers. And, you know, if you've seen that kid unboxing toys, he makes millions of dollars a year just, you know, taking toys apart. And I know people who, you know, their kids would rather watch the kid unbox the toy than have the toy themselves. So I'm just a piker in this regard.
Well, it's hard to compete with a kid unboxing toys, but still 500,000 viewers.
Yeah, I was really surprised because I needed to learn video editing and I just needed something to write about. And I just started filming myself talking about telescopes. I figured 20 people would watch it and that would be the end of that. But now we're 9 months down the road and it's almost like it's controlling me.
A victim of your own success. Are you having fun doing the videos?
No, it's awful. It's it's
that
worse
sounds
than
much like you, Ed.
Well, it's worse than writing because if you write a phrase or you write a paragraph and it's good, that you know, you're done. So if I write a paragraph that I have to speak, I could film it and screw up. And, you know, the writing is only half the battle. I have to write it and perform it. So there's an extra layer of ways to screw up.
Well, I don't want to traumatize you, Ed. So let's move on past your YouTube videos to the original subject. I would actually like to go back to the cosmos. I know that you've taken over, and correct me if this is wrong, over 200,000 astrophotographs. And I read somewhere, I think in a previous interview you did with someone, you've spent about 60 nights a year photographing the sky. And it's also rumored that your garage is full of telescopes. So can you talk about how this self-described lifelong obsession started with you?
Well, I've always been fascinated. I think it was a natural fascination with all people. You know, you look up and you wonder what's up there and how do you enjoy it a little bit better. So we didn't have a lot of money growing up, so buying a telescope was out of the question. So I learned certain things, you know, buying books and just lying on a lawn chair at night and looking up or using a pair of binoculars, something like that. You know, as we got older, I don't know if you remember, photocopiers used to actually be that. It would take a picture of whatever you put in the document glass and then it would reproduce it. Well, the lens in the photocopier turns out to be a really high quality piece of optic. And so my buddy and I, we would go around town to office buildings and we would say, excuse me, you have any dead copiers you're going to throw out? And we'd show up with our tools and we'd try to explain to them, you know, what we were after. And inevitably we'd find somebody that had a dead copier. And by the way, those lenses are really hard to get out. They're right in the middle of the photocopier. You got to take practically the whole thing apart. But, you know, we'd get a couple of those and we just built our own telescopes around those. It wasn't like it is today where you could just go online and order one. Those were pretty hard to get back then.
You know, it's funny, most boys probably collect baseball cards or whatever, but here you are collecting parts from old telecopier machines.
Yeah, in fact, when you're a teenager, most boys are like hiding under the covers with the Playboy magazine. Like I was under there with telescope brochures.
Do you remember when you bought your first telescope and what it was?
Yeah, I took a job flipping hamburgers at a certain well-known fast food restaurant. And I was making sub-minimum wage. And by the time you took out the gas money and all the other expenses, you know, I was making like a dollar an hour. So I had to save up 319 of those dollars to buy this telescope. And you know, there was no internet back then, so you had to call up an order. And of course, when I ordered, I was counting the days it would take for it to get from California to where I lived. And I had said it planned everything out. And when I called them, they said, we're back ordered by 6 months.
Oh, were you devastated?
Of course.
How many telescopes do you own now?
It depends what you call a telescope, because sometimes I'll just get an optical tube without a mount, or I'll get a half an optical tube with the other half broken. And I hope I can get the other part and match it together. But you know, somewhere between 30 and 35 is usually about where I'm sitting.
Wow. Have you made any discoveries that you were particularly excited about?
No, and I keep meaning to try to do that. It turns out somebody always beats me to it. There was one night I was out, it was January of 2019, there was an eclipse of the moon. And I was out and I took a lot of pictures. And it turns out if you took a picture at just the right time, you caught something hitting the moon. And the guy got famous and, you know, people got famous. And so, of course, whenever that happens, I go back over my pictures and then I try to look and think, well, did I catch that somehow and just didn't see it in my pictures? And of course, I missed it.
Darn it. Well, that guy probably doesn't have a 500,000 YouTube viewers yet. So there's that at least. So obviously, you've been doing this since you were a kid, knocking on office doors to get parts from copy machines. Do you still experience the same wonder or mystery or excitement when you look up either through your binoculars or through one of your telescopes?
Yeah, I mean, the sky up there isn't quite as static as you might think. Things do change over time. And in fact, last month, a Japanese amateur astronomer discovered a new nova out in the constellation of Cassiopeia. So if you know that area, there's an extra star there. It'll be there for a few weeks or a few months while it explodes and burns off all of its mass. But, you know, for a couple of weeks there, we were all turning our telescopes over there. Oh, look, there's a star that's not supposed to be there.
So you have this love of astronomy, and you are an accomplished pianist. And of course, your bike riding is crazy. What'd you say you did the other day? 30-some miles, you know, in the wind. And then, of course, there's your pursuit of creative writing. So you're this guy with this ridiculous amount of talent. And also, you're someone who doesn't like to do things at all in a small way. I was reading your LinkedIn profile the other day, and you wrote that you're semi-retired and that you're now seeking the next big challenge in life. So I wanted to ask you, any ideas on what that next big challenge is?
Well, it may be enough just to have you know that I do have a list of challenges written down and dates next to them. I've always done that, and my hit rate on that is about 20 to 25%. So people think of me as this, I don't know, I guess you think of me this way, as this accomplished guy, but I fail about 80% of the time.
Well, you could have fooled me. So you started out in life as an engineer, is that correct?
Yeah, I went to Illinois for electrical engineering.
And then, you know, where I intersected in your life, you were pursuing creative writing degrees. What are your interests in creative writing?
I like writing linked short stories. And so what that is, you can read each of the stories in the collection individually, and they're interesting on their own. But if you read them in the order that the author has placed them, the idea is that the reader gets something a little bit extra. You reward the reader by staying with you for the entire arc of the stories.
What's your favorite part about creative writing? Do you enjoy it?
No, I don't like that either.
In this interview, at some point, we're going to get to what you do enjoy doing.
Well, I mean, it's painful, right? I mean, I get this idea of I think I can do it, and it reaches the point where, you know what? I know I can do this, and at this point, I can only fail, right?
All right. Well, what do you think your strength is as a creative writer?
I like showing people things. I like making people feel the things that I feel. I think I was watching an interview with Michael Chabon. He said, when you see an event in your life, it's not the event, it's what you feel about the event. It's the emotion. And that's what makes anything human. And it also makes each story individual. Because you can say that every story's been written, right? We've all said, how can I tell a story better than somebody else? You know, boy meets girl, right? That's been told a million times. But if you start from this idea of access, what information do you have access to that nobody else does? Start there and you'll always have a unique story. So you had boy meets girl, but nobody's had your relationships. Nobody's had your boy meets girl. So in that context, boy meets girl may not be so bad anymore.
Because it's uniquely yours, or at least through your unique lens. It all comes back to your many lenses. Well, Ed, do you have a few more minutes? There's one more question I like to ask every guest on this show.
Sure.
All right. So if you wrote a 6-word memoir, what would it be?
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Does it have to make grammatical sense?
It has to make sense to you, Ed. So no, it could be six individual words. It could be a sentence. It could be an entire story with conflict, crisis, and resolution inherent in it. It can be whatever you feel captures you in this moment in time.
Okay, so I'll give you the one that doesn't make grammatical sense. Individualist, curious, experimenter, let's do it.
That's you.
Now that I'm looking at it, let's is two words. Have I violated the terms of the agreement?
You're such a stickler for the rules, Ed, I swear. Since I'm the rule maker here, I'm going to say it's just fine. It still qualifies as a six-word memoir.
Okay.
I love that, though. Call to action at the end, though. Let's do it, because that is you. You are a man of action. Oh, I did want to follow up, because you had said, well, creative writing is hard. And, you know, there were other things you were talking about you didn't enjoy. What's something you just get pure pleasure from?
You know, it's probably the bike ride, because it rolls up a lot of things in one, doesn't it? I mean, it's fitness, it's entertainment, and it's transportation all rolled up into one. And it can be writing, too. A lot of my best ideas come with me when your mind is clear and, hey, that's kind of interesting. I wonder what would happen if I wrote about that. I'm sure you're the same way. Some of your best ideas come when you're not trying.
Yeah, I can see how your bike rides absolutely inspire the wonderful creative writing you do. So wonderful. Thank you for that. I also want to thank you for the inscription that you wrote in my copy of your guide to astrophotography. I don't know if you remember what you wrote, but it read, "To Joni, the reason I had to do all this work is because of you."
Oh yeah, I did write that, didn't I?
Yeah, so Ed, I take pride in that, and I hope to push you to write your next book. So thank you very much, though, for being on my podcast. I really mean it.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you want to find out more about Ed Ting and his window into the wonders and beauty of the night sky, please check out his website, www.scopereviews.com. So that's it for this episode of Author, Can I Ask You? Thanks everybody for listening. And if you like what you heard, please spread the word and visit me on my website, joanybcole.com. In the meantime, take care, act civil, and don't be afraid to ask the odd question.